With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. I'm a Fresno State Bulldog alum, and so I think that this is kind of neat that the Jordan College of Agriculture Sciences and Technology, also known as JCAST, just celebrated 100 years of existence. And they did so at the Fresno State versus UNLV football game with a centennial tailgate. A couple different state dignitaries were there, including Assemblyman Bill Jones, who was the original founders of the Ag One Foundation, as well as the current Ag One Foundation chairman, Roger Isom. Something else that happened during the centennial event was the recognition of the creation and the installation of the Western Agricultural Processors Association tree nut processing line. If you'd like to find out more information about the foundation, you can visit jcast.fresnostate.edu. And now let's get into today's show headlines. California representatives seeking action on tariff hike on U.S. almonds. U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai received a letter recently calling for immediate action against Turkey's recent decision to increase tariffs on American-grown almonds. A bipartisan delegation led by Congressman Jim Costa and Congressman John Duarte, including 9 other representatives, said this presents setbacks for American farmers, workers, and the domestic almond industry. Almond Alliance President and CEO Aubrey Betancourt says, quote, "This tariff hike is not just a number. It's a direct hit to the livelihoods of thousands of American families. We've worked hard to build a sustainable and competitive industry. It's disheartening to see our efforts undermined by unjust tariffs. We call upon our leaders to act swiftly and decisively." The letter urged the congressional leadership to prioritize these issues in upcoming trade discussions with Turkey. Turkey plans to raise the most favored nation duty on U.S. in-shell and shelled almonds by 15%. This, alongside with Turkey's existing 10% retaliatory tariff, results in a 25% tariff on U.S. almonds. This puts American almonds in an unfavorable position in the almond market. And now here's AgNet West Brian German with more agriculture news.
The rainfall that impacted many California crops earlier in the year has created a bit of a delayed harvest for rice growers. It's been a good year for rice, with production largely rebounding from last year. California Rice Commission President and CEO Tim Johnson said they're nearing the end of harvest, just a tad later than average.
Talking with my growers here just the last several days, I think we're around 75% harvested in an average year without that early, that spring rain that we got, that delay in the crop, which, as you mentioned, many had rice also. We would probably be very close to being finished with harvest this week. So we're a little bit behind. Good news is the sun's out again, and we've got some nice drying north winds in the Sacramento Valley. Estimates are now in the next 10 or so days we should finish up harvest.
Rule changes are coming for fumigant use. Riverside County Ag Commissioner Ruben Arroyo explains the latest on the rules for 1,3-D.
The issue of 1,3-D has been, of course, the off-gassing of the product. It comes in as a liquid, and then once it hits the atmosphere, it could gas off. Well, as I mentioned, they've come up with mitigation measures through the industry to help prevent that. And I think they've been doing it successfully through deeper injections and tarping and all of that. But now the department is looking at the evaluation of bystander concerns. And that's where now we're getting into a different arena. And so people are looking at what are the potential changes here, right? I thought we've mitigated it to a point where we don't have to worry about it, right? We don't have to worry about reaching a threshold of how much is used per township. But it doesn't seem to be going in that direction, right? Now we're still looking at a township cap. We're still looking at doing something more for mitigation here. So that's something to look out for.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Irrigation in arid California is as complicated as it is essential. Unpredictable supplies, uneven distribution, complicated application schedules, and regulation make it a challenge. No wonder help with water is the biggest request at USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. Since 2014, NRCS has invested over $100 million helping over 1,000 California farmers conserve water. By using superior technology and savvy management, farmers get more crops with fewer drops. Join the Water Savings Club. Contact your local NRCS office. NRCS, helping people help the land since 1935.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, President Biden this week signed an executive order dealing with a topic that agriculture has had its eye on for a while, artificial intelligence. I talked with R.T. Prabhakar, assistant to the president and director of the Office of Science and Technology Policy, to find out what the executive order actually does.
It is the single biggest and most significant action that any government anywhere in the world has ever taken on artificial intelligence. That all started out of his really clear view that AI is one of the most powerful technologies of our time. It's in our lives, and it's coming into more parts of our lives. And he's been clear from the very start that we have to manage AI's risks so that we can seize its tremendous benefits. And that's what this executive order is all about, is all the levers that he can pull as President of the United States under existing law to get that done.
She said the executive order should not stand alone and others should do their part.
The president was clear from the beginning that everyone's going to have to step up to their responsibilities. He and the vice president called on companies to step up, and they were able to get commitments from 15 companies with voluntary commitments on safety and a number of other provisions. This takes an important next step with the actions that we in the executive branch can take. These are the things that the president's stepping up to, but we also know that as far as this takes us, that it can't take us the full way and that Congress needs to act. In particular, the president calls on Congress. In doing this today, he called on Congress to pass privacy legislation to protect us, but also our kids. And that and other actions are things that Congress is considering. We'll continue to work with them on a bipartisan basis. So this is a huge step forward. I think it puts us on in a great place, but this technology is evolving and how we use it is also evolving. And so you'll see more as that all unfolds.
She also told me there are many ways we are already interacting with AI that we may not think about.
Well, I think the place to start is just to recognize that it's already in our lives. I think, you know, when you go online and you get an ad targeted to you, I think we tend to think of that as something that AI did. But it's actually, often it's behind the diagnosis or the prescription that you get from a doctor. It's sometimes behind the yes or no that you get to your rental application or your mortgage loan application. And so it is already embedded in our lives in a lot of ways. If you look at what's happening now with generative AI, with chatbots, with image generators, that's changing all kinds of other areas that we hadn't really thought were going to be disrupted by artificial intelligence. And there's much more to come. So it's broad, it's pervasive, and that's why the president has been clear from the beginning that our job here at the White House our job is to worry about this for the United States of America. So we think about it very broadly. And that's why you'll see that in the executive order, the actions that the president took address issues of safety, issues of privacy, issues of rooting out bias and discrimination, issues that affect workers, and much more.
She said it's important to keep safety measures updated with new technology.
Well, I'll say something. Today, the president celebrated the fact that America leads the world in AI innovation, but that now, with this act, we're also going to lead in how we use it in powerful and really responsible ways. And, you know, I'll say, as an engineer and as a technologist, the reason we do this work is to make a future that's great for our kids. And when I see this kind of advance, not just in the technology, but in how we choose to use it, it gives me great, great hope. And so, yes, I think technology is going to continue to be important for our future. But this is a great example of about how we should embrace it, but also use it responsibly.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, there may be one of the most hidden secrets for National Milk Producers Federation members. NMPF's influential quarterly publication that puts dairy side of the story before the government and regulatory experts who directly influence dairy policy. And during this week's Dairy Defined podcast, the organization's regulatory team talked about the critical work they're doing for dairy. One of the team members, NMPF's Chief Science Officer Jamie Jonker, explains what the publication is all about.
It's a recordation of things that are happening in that regulatory space. It's important for us to get our side of the regulatory story out to the broader community, not only the dairy industry itself, but also the regulators at the federal and state level on the variety of issues that happen in the regulatory space that are important for the U.S. dairy industry. It is a great way to keep track of the slow-moving issues that are happening in the dairy regulatory space. You know, many regulators have their very narrow part of regulations that they deal with, and they don't have the broader understanding about the larger regulatory platform that affects dairy farmers and dairy cooperatives. And this is a fantastic way to get that broader platform of regulatory issues to those regulators that may be only dealing with a small part of the dairy regulatory process.
Now, another team member, Senior Vice President for Regulatory Affairs and NMPF Chief Counsel Clay Detlison, talks about one of the big issues they're working on.
There's a lot of big issues that we're working on, but I want to focus on one particular area, and that's food labeling. It's really multifaceted. Earlier this year, we had the Food and Drug Administration propose a definition of what a healthy food was or constituted. And unfortunately for dairy, fat-free milk and fat-free yogurt, unflavored, would qualify, but not most of the other dairy products. We think that's wrong. FDA this fall is going to propose a front-of-pack labeling scheme, and they're going to focus on things like saturated fat, sodium, and added sugars, which we don't think is going to be real good for dairy either. So we got to try and get all of this fixed. And part of trying to get things fixed is working on the dietary guidelines and trying to get the dietary guidelines to recognize that dairy is beneficial for a human diet at all fat levels. So we're working that angle to try and influence some of the other areas. And then, of course, to wrap up the other labeling issues, we've been fighting with the plant-based food manufacturers for many years as they try and usurp dairy's halo and use dairy terminology in the marketing of their products. So we had FDA issue some guidance earlier this year. We informed the Food and Drug Administration that that guidance was highly flawed and needed to be withdrawn. We're going to be waiting for that decision probably for a year. And on the heels of that will come FDA's plant-based guidance for all of the other foods. The one they issued in February is for milk only.
The full podcast can be found on the NMPF website, nmpf.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
You're listening to Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Why do we have GMOs? Actually, we've been modifying crops for thousands of years to prevent crop loss from pest and weather damage, to grow more food on less land, even to improve nutrition. Today, GMOs are developed for the same reasons. With genetic engineering, scientists can change and improve crops more easily and quickly. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
An easier way to legally get your Christmas tree from a national forest. That's coming up on This End of Hours. For several years, the Forest Service has offered Christmas tree permit sales through local offices, but now it's even easier. Christmas tree permits for those wishing to cut their trees in their local or favorite national forest are now available online at recreation.gov. Janelle Smith of the U.S. Forest Service explains where Christmas tree cutting permits apply in specific areas within the nation's forests.
So when you purchase a permit, oftentimes through rec.gov or even on the local forest webpage, you'll see special cutting areas. And so forest health experts have identified those areas that would really benefit from having some of those smaller diameter trees that actually make a perfect centerpiece for your holidays available to the public. So it's not just a free-for-all that you can go out there and cut any tree anywhere. And all of that information is available when you start going through that permit process.
I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Just as has been predicted, farmers are getting lower prices for most of their commodities. USDA Ag Prices Report shows that during September, overall prices received by farmers, that index dropping by about 3%, putting the price index 7% below September a year ago. A quick look at a few commodities now. Corn losing 52 cents during September, down to an average 5.21 a bushel. That's $1.88 below September a year ago. Similar story for wheat, losing 28 cents in September, down to an average 7.07 a bushel, taking it below a year ago by $1.71. Similar scenario for soybeans. Growers in September seeing prices drop by 90 cents, down to 13.30 a bushel, exactly a dollar less than September of 22. For livestock, only beef cattle selling for more than a year ago. Everything else, hogs, broilers, turkeys, milk, and eggs, all running below a year ago. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen. Farmers use the public roadways to move farm machinery and equipment. Sometimes mailboxes present issues. What are the rules for placement of mailboxes along rural roads? What if you hit one? The U.S. Postal Service has rules for placement of mailboxes. Generally, a mailbox must be 41 to 45 inches above the road surface and 6 to 8 inches from the edge of the road. It also cannot be a fixed object that won't break away when it is struck. The meaning of edge of the road depends on state law. Shoulder is defined differently from state to state. Each state also has regulations governing the weight and size of farm equipment that can travel public roads. Sometimes those limitations are lifted during planting and harvesting seasons, and unique exemptions might apply in certain situations. What if you accidentally hit a mailbox with your farm equipment? A mailbox is federal property, but criminal charges apply only if you intentionally or maliciously destroy a mailbox. State law will typically require you to notify the property owner and local police. Also, there might be local regulations that apply. But if you're operating your farm equipment and machinery on the public roads within the applicable rules and happen to strike a mailbox, paying for the damage is probably the worst that will happen to you. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen.
With a farm bill that has expired with no clear path on that score, and with still no federal budget set, the Agriculture Department's going to use $1.3 billion of last fiscal year's Commodity Credit Corporation funds to keep certain USDA international trade programs operating, specifically the Regional Agricultural Promotion Program. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told reporters,
"We're looking to utilize these resources to continue to expand our efforts in terms of trade promotion in non-traditional markets. This will complement our existing trade promotion programs as we await Congress's action on both the budget and the farm bill."
Vilsack said the U.S. faces growing competition as it tries to sell its food and ag products around the world, and so it's essential to keep our export promotion programs going as much as possible.
It is clear to us that the key to trade opportunities involves making sure that we continue to support people in country who are representing and working for the United States and United States agriculture to promote our goods and products. It's important that we continue to have a presence in those key agricultural market areas. It's important for us to continue to do the trade missions, which we've done on an expanded basis in a number of traditional but also in a number of non-traditional market opportunities to continue the diversification effort. It's also critically important that we continue to provide resources for promotions, working with our cooperative groups across the world to make sure that customers and countries across the world are aware of the quality, the quantity, the safety, and the affordability of American agricultural exports.
Of course, some countries cannot afford to buy all the food they need. And so, in addition to the $1 billion investment in export promotion efforts to sell products,
we're also announcing an additional $1 billion that will be allocated for responding to the global food insecurity challenges we face across the world and providing resources for us to essentially make commodity donations.
This would involve USDA buying products from U.S. farmers and food companies to then be donated to help alleviate food insecurity for people around the world.
We think this will obviously also provide some additional boost to our own commodity markets and producers.
In Washington, Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
You're listening to AgNet NewsHour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to the AgNet NewsHour by AgNet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
No action on interest rates expected by the Fed today, and it looks like another little or no action day for grain and livestock futures. I'm Mark Oppold with the Bottom Line Report, brought to you by Kloss Equipment and AgriLiquid. The Fed concludes a two-day meeting today. Over a 90% chance they'll leave interest rates unchanged. But strong economic data still leaves a 50-50 chance, analysts say, of a rate hike, not likely December 13th, final meeting of the year, but early in the first quarter, 2024. They say consumer spending is still strong, companies are hiring at a rapid pace, and if companies feel they can raise prices without scaring away those customers, that won't help the Fed reach their goal of 2% inflation. The result? Higher rates in 2024. Discover the entire lineup of combines, forage harvesters, tractors, balers, and hay tools from Kloss, engineered for a better harvest and service you can trust. Visit Kloss.com. This is the Bottom Line Report. Be sure your crop nutrition plan is ready to go next spring. Pro Germinator from AgriLiquid will help. Unique combination of nutrients promotes exceptional early growth. Visit AgriLiquid.com to learn more. Grain and livestock futures look to stay range-bound most all of November. That's our Bottom Line at midweek. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
Financial help for producers who went through a natural disaster last year. The Department of Agriculture will provide more than $3 billion to commodity and specialty crop producers impacted by the natural disasters of 2022. Eligible impacted producers can apply for financial assistance through the Emergency Relief Program 2022. The program will help offset financial impacts of crop yield and value losses from qualifying disasters that year. Farm Service Agency Administrator Zach Ducheneau says 2022 was another year of weather-related challenges, for some the third consecutive year or more in a row. ERP 2022 covers losses to crops, trees, bushes, and vines due to qualifying calendar year 2022 natural disaster events, including wildfires, hurricanes, floods, derechos, excessive heat, tornadoes, winter storms, freeze, including polar vortex, smoke exposure, excessive moisture, qualifying drought, and related conditions. The application deadline has not yet been set. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
USDA released a bearish cattle on feed report in October, showing cattle on feed at 11.5 million head, the second highest figure on record. Barrett Nelson, American Farm Bureau Federation economist, explains what this means for cattle markets going forward.
We have a lot of cattle that are being placed on feed, and a very high percentage, near 40% of those cattle are still heifers. And in the short run, this means that we're going to have a very high supply of cattle coming to market at one point in time. But in the long run, this takes a lot of cattle out of the market that could have otherwise been held back for replacements.
Replacements are what help rebuild herds following a dip in herd size.
Replacement heifers are basically the planting intentions of the cattle business. So when we have less of those replacement heifers being held back to produce calves, we ultimately have a smaller inventory. We've been going through this for a couple of years now, but now as this happens, we're looking at 2024 at the earliest before we can even consider starting to replace this cattle herd.
Nelson says consumers will likely feel the pinch of higher beef prices next year.
So what this means for consumers is record beef prices in 2024 and 2025. A lot of the economy situations, we're talking about recession, we're still talking about inflation and where our money's at, are going to dictate the ability of the economy to sustain these high beef prices, or if consumers will start switching over to other substitutes like pork and chicken.
Learn more on the market intel page at FB.org. Michael Clements, Washington.
Connecting veterans with careers within the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That is one of the many duties for Monshi Ramdas, USDA's Military Veterans Agricultural Liaison.
Part of the Office of Partnerships and Public Engagement under the Secretary's office, I help veterans and military spouses explore ways to launch successful careers in agriculture by helping veterans and their spouses find employment at USDA agencies, connecting veterans with paid apprenticeship through USDA and the Department of Defense's SkillBridge program, and working with the Department of Veterans Affairs, helping veterans to gain valuable civilian work experience through non-paid internships with USDA agencies.
As mentioned, the liaison works to encourage employment opportunities in agriculture for veterans, including through the federal government and USDA.
USDA also work with the Department of Defense SkillBridge program, where military personnel can be approved by their supervisors for an internship with one of our USDA offices while still earning their military paycheck.
In addition to the SkillBridge program,
military veterans can also enter into internships on farms across America through this program called Arm to Farm, which is offered by a nonprofit that we work with known as ATRA across 45 states in America, collaborating with farms in those states.
Rob Das provides one example of how the Military Veterans Agricultural Liaison's Office assist veterans in potential career opportunities with USDA.
Here's a veteran that was recently hired in North Carolina. He's a loan technician. And when he contacted me and asked for assistance with employment, he wanted to get a job where he could work as a loan technician because of the skill and the experience that he had working in the private sector. He was a successful hire where I assisted him, provided help with resume, etc., and then matching his skill with USDA in the rural development, who hired him as a loan technician.
More information about USDA's Military Veterans Agricultural Liaison Department and the services it offers can be found at this web address, www.usda.gov/OUR-agency/initiatives/veterans. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
How are GMO plants made? First, scientists look for a desired trait in a plant, animal, or even bacteria. It could be a trait like resistance to drought, insects, or viruses. Then they copy the gene that contains that trait and insert it into the DNA of the plant they want to improve. Scientists then grow that plant to see if it adopts the desired trait. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. For today's interview segment, we have part four of my conversation with AgSafe President and CEO Teresa Keene. Today, we talk all about AgSafe's upcoming conference called Cultivate, as well as how they're ramping up for next year's event called Activate. And I'm so glad that you just talked about the important role that supervisors have in a workplace. Now, you guys at AgSafe, you guys put together a couple different conferences and events that take place throughout the year that focus on not only employees, but the supervisors and all of really the new, we've talked about legislation today. So the legislation that they should be mindful of, some of the new trainings and tactics that they can implement in their operations. You have a conference coming up, and it's called the Cultivate Conference. Is that correct?
Yes, the Cultivate Forum. Yes, we have that coming up November 15th and 16th. It's going to be at an Aptos, so not a terrible place to be in November. And the Cultivate Conference is a tick different than the other conferences that we have traditionally held. And this really is for executives and management of ag operations, and then also kind of support industries as well. It's a smaller conference, and it's planned that way strategically to ensure that we have great conversations amongst those that are participating, and then also with our speakers. And this year, what we are focusing in on, it's always been about looking at the bigger picture. So what is coming, not just in the ag space, but, you know, what's happening in, you know, this time and place. And so we are talking about looking at our company cultures and how we can support our workforce. So we've got a great speaker, Eric Bailey, with Bailey Strategic Innovations Group. He'll be talking about that. We also have an economist that is looking at our labor force in the future. We know that the baby boomers, we don't have the same population that we're going to have moving forward. The next two generations didn't have as many kids. And so as a result, there's going to be a smaller labor pool. And so we're all going to be, you know, kind of fighting for available labor. So what does that do to us as, you know, businesses as we start to plan for our future? How can we do less with more, especially with less people? So maybe thinking about more ways to integrate technology. And that being the case, we know we're also talking about AI, what's happening in the space. So we'll be talking about that as well. And then also financial forecasts. Where are people putting their money right now? Are we going through a recession? Are we not going through a recession? You know, what do the next 2 to 3 years look like? So we'll be doing all those kind of big picture topics at this conference.
And who is the ideal attendee to this conference?
So anyone, I would say anyone in your management, anybody that has an influence on how your operation is running. So it could be your C-suites, it could be your HR and safety directors. So anybody that has that kind of influence on your operation would be a fantastic person to come to this conference.
Okay. Go ahead and give me the details and how folks can register for this.
Absolutely. So folks can go online to agsafe.org and they can register for the conference. Again, it's November 15th and 16th in Aptos at the Seascape Resort. And we'd love to have you.
Gotcha. And now before we, you know, wrap up our conversation, let's sort of talk about the Activate Conference. Now, I've been to this conference and I've covered it a couple different years, and there's always such a great turnout. And I actually get valuable content that I air throughout our program here, just because they do go over some of those up and coming legislations and key topic points that folks should, you know, keep their eye out for. Talk to me about the Activate Conference.
Oh, absolutely. So we're really excited. We've already opened up registration for Activate 24, which is happening February 20th through the 22nd of 2024, and we'll be in Monterey this year. And we've got a really great lineup. I'm really excited about it. We always invite all the agencies to come. We want to hear from those that are enforcing laws and regs. And so we've invited the Kalusha chief is going to be at our conference this year. We'll also have EPA, DPR, and our Monterey County Ag Commissioner doing a panel together. We have some really fantastic panels that we've brought together. So we've got panels on the workplace violence regulation and things to be thinking about as you're putting together your plan. So we'll have more information then. Yes. And then also thinking about your workforce. And as we're finding more of our senior level management that is retiring, how do you go about, you know, putting together a succession plan? We talk about succession planning for the very top level most of the time, but we forget about this really important middle layer of our operations. And these people have been with us for, you know, 20, sometimes 30 years and hold all that knowledge. So how is that knowledge getting passed down? How do teams come together as that transition happens? So we'll be talking about that. And we've got some technology sessions. We're going to be talking about drones and the new regulations around that. So we've got a really fantastic set of sessions that we're offering, more than 40 in English and Spanish. We're doing some of our certificate programs. So if somebody wants to get a foundational education in safety, we've got our program that you can go to. We've got an HR program. And then we've got a new program that we're releasing as well. It's our essentially like our Supervisor Essentials program. And this one, we are focusing in on making sure our supervisors understand the laws and regs that, you know, HR already knows and are going through it. So making sure that they understand wage and hour issues, making sure that people are, you know, again, paid sick leave, what are the laws and regs and why it's important for them to know those things. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, spending some time and talking about leadership training with them as well. So how to communicate with your teams, how to motivate your teams. If there's an issue or conflict, how do you deal with those? And so we're really excited about the launch of that program, and that program will be running concurrently with conference, and it's going to be offered in Spanish.
Ooh, gotcha. Now, we mentioned that for Cultivate, the ideal attendee is those executive folks and folks that have a role in making decisions for companies. Who is the ideal attendee for the Activate conference?
Honestly, it's, you know, if you've got a new supervisor, foreman, lead, this is a great conference for them, but on up the food chain in terms of your operation. So it's great for managers, maybe your coordinators. And then also we've got great programs and sessions for your executives as well. So, you know, making sure that you are showing your face as we have leadership from our California agencies there, as well as our federal agencies. So, you know, EEOC, and to be able to ask those questions and also to give them some feedback of, you know, this is what's going on in our industry, and give them some of the practical realities as well.
Hmm, that's right. Now, if folks want to gather more information, you did say that registration is up and running. So where can they go to do that?
We've got it on the homepage of agsafe.org. So you can go there and get registered for annual conference, get your hotel room. We even have a golf tournament this year. So we're super excited about bringing that back. So some really great classes, hands-on training, and, you know, making sure that information that we do is practical and that you can take it back to your operations and start implementing things.
Oh, you got it, Teresa. Well, thank you so much for breaking down some of the new and changing regulations that is impacting, you know, our agricultural workforce, and also just sort of gearing people up to attend your event. I know that the information is going to be valuable there, and so just reminding folks that they can attend. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me today.
Thanks for so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
The UC Davis Department of Viticulture and Enology is hosting another On the Road event next week. On the Road programs are educational seminars to help the department communicate with the grape and wine industries by bringing faculty to different regions of California. The next event will be held at the UC Livermore Collaboration Center on Thursday, November 9th. UC Davis Assistant Professor Megan Bartlett will begin the program with a presentation on irrigation management for late-season dehydration. That will be followed by information on how to manage powdery mildew, botrytis bunch rot, and trunk diseases of grapevine using synthetic, biological, and organic fungicides. Following the break, there will be presentations on grapevine red blotch virus and understanding and controlling extraction in red wine fermentations. More information about the program is available on the upcoming events page at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
Syngenta Group recognized as top agricultural employer. More? Syngenta Group was again recognized as one of the globe's top five leading employers in the 2023 Science Careers Top Employer Survey. Syngenta Group employs 59,000 people across more than 100 countries and works toward the challenging goal of feeding the 8 billion people on Earth. A Syngenta spokesperson says, quote, "We're excited that Syngenta Group is again being named as the number one agricultural employer." Recently, Syngenta Seeds held a grand opening for its R&D Innovation Center in Malta, Illinois, which joins a connected modern ecosystem of more than 150 Syngenta R&D and production sites worldwide and exemplifies the company's $1.48 billion USDA annual investment globally. Syngenta Group, registered in Shanghai, China, and with its management headquarters in Switzerland, includes four business units: Syngenta Crop Protection, headquartered in Switzerland; Syngenta Seeds, headquartered in the United States; Adama, headquartered in Israel; and Syngenta Group, China. NAFB contributed to that report.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at Agnet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the Agnet News Hour from Agnet West. Agnet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.